My area of interest and expertise is what I call the architecture of home-based work. It's buildings that combine dwelling and workplace.
And tell me about some of the developments that are happening at the moment, which means that what you've got to say is of interest to the way that the economy is changing.
Home-based work is growing very rapidly, globally actually, but certainly in the UK. But we don't design for it at either the building scale or at the urban scale. And my research shows that this causes great problems for home-based workers themselves and doesn't exploit the amazing potential of this working practice.
So let's talk about some of those problems. What sort of problems are people facing when they set up on their own?
Well, there are different problems if people are owner-occupiers than if people rent. For owner-occupiers, it's generally fine if people have got a spare room and they live on their own. But the minute you add a couple of children into the equation, or an elderly or sick relation, or you have an occupation that involves members of the public, interactions with members of the public, then the working in the home environment, you know, a spare room in an apartment becomes very problematic.
So we have experienced in the past a sort of version of this, I suppose. With the high street, you have a shop and a flat above it. And we're actually seeing a lot of shops finding problems with survival in the high street. Are those the sort of spaces we need to be using again?
Yes, but the problem with that is that a lot of the rules and regulations around the built environment today, which were generally set up or originated in the beginning of the 20th century, are organised around an absolute separation between dwelling and workplace. And therefore, they very often inhibit or sometimes even prohibit home-based work. In the case of the living above the shop, the most home-based or a lot of home-based businesses are small scale. They're little. They don't have huge turnovers. And the business rates, for example, on a premises in the high street can be very high. So it can tip the balance as to whether these home-based businesses are actually viable, because people often engage in home-based work to reduce their costs.
And I suppose there's also a situation where someone has a business, say, in a shed at the bottom of their garden. If they're taking deliveries or, you know, a van turns up, it can cause problems to their neighbours.
Well, that's not my experience, actually. I mean, I've interviewed quite a lot of people now, and what they generally say is that that the neighbours quite enjoy the coming and going. I think there's one business that I interviewed in San Francisco where their business absolutely boomed, and then of course they built their own premises they were in a residential cul-de-sac, and it got crazy with the deliveries and coming and going. So I think what happens is that then it naturally those sorts of businesses move on to more appropriate premises.
So let's just go into a few more of the things that you found about these home-based businesses and the trends we're seeing with them. What sort of really interested you?
Well, I think, I'm interested in the buildings. I'm an architect and an academic, so it's the buildings and the spaces that really interest me. And I think one of the interesting things I found when I started was that people don't only work in their homes, they also live at their workplaces. And this is a form that is very rarely considered, or sometimes the happiest home-based businesses inhabit buildings that have equal status on the street. So members of the public, they can engage with members of the public in their workspace and then have a private home as well.
But that actually does take a change in mental attitude. If someone has been working for an employer, for a company somewhere else for a while, and then they've set up on their own, I suppose there's a mental thing about when they go out of their kitchen, into the hallway, and then into their study or office or shed, they have to take a different attitude to what they're doing. Is that a case?
I think that you can't generalise about these things. It very much depends on the personalities, and people come up with different ways of managing that. Some people find it very difficult to make the separation between their home and their work, and so they take quite extreme precautions, like going for a walk around the block and then coming in and going to work. So they actually take themselves on a walk to work. Other people don't find it a problem, and I mean, one curtain maker that I interviewed was just so happy. She'd been working on a minimum wage for employers for years and years and years, and then she suddenly realized she could set up. And so she was working in a detached house and working in her garage, and she just said she'd never been happier in her life.
I know you don't want to talk about sort of the governance of this particularly, but there may be some advice from what you have discovered for people who are thinking about policies. What sort of things should they be considering?
Policymakers, I think that it is a change in mindset for policymakers, and so if they can start to realise that the home-based workforce isn't just, I mean, people have a sort of an idea that it's sort of women working for pin money, that old, old Victorian idea. Really isn't. People, there's serious businesses out there, and a lot of the rules and regulations get in the way. So, for example, in social housing, most social housing tenants have signed a tenancy agreement that either prohibits or really restricts home-based work. Really prevents home-based work. There's a major problem with the way that business rates and council tax is organised that can be punitive to home-based workers. And planning. The planning system is not supportive in England. In Scotland, it's much better. But in England, the planning system is not supportive of home-based work. And therefore, as a result of these sorts of problems, one of the surprising findings of my research is that most home-based workers operate covertly, either because they fear they're breaking some rule or regulation or other, or because they actually are.
Okay, so there's a lot that policymakers have to think about. There's a lot of things that designers of workspaces and home spaces need to think about. But let's underline this. There's been a big change in the way people work. Let's just talk about that very briefly. What is that big change?
Well, I think there are a number of big changes, but what I imagine you're referring to is the increase in information technologies and telecommunications. And these, I mean, that is the most enormous shift. And that, what that has done is it's meant that a very large number of people no longer have to gather in the collective workplace in order to do their work. They can do their work anywhere, and they do. And for a lot of people, working from home has become a major liberation from stressful, exhausting, expensive commuting. And you know, with issues around carer dependence, we've got more women in employment than ever before. And the school day finishes in the middle of what most of us think of as our working day.
Thank you very much, Frances Hollis.